when we look at the avos and the imahos, so on the one hand, we view them on a pedestal that these were the progenitors of our people and the most holy of individuals, and we treat them with a amount of kavod, of honor and respect, and we view them as they're our parents. So they're the ones who molded us and created us and trailblazed for us what it means to be Jewish, and therefore, when it comes to actions and behaviors and actions that they take that we find questionable and it troubles us, so there's always that tension as to, to on the one hand to try to reinterpret and to explain their actions on a level that's above and beyond us, something that we can't attain, we can't reach, and that the things that they did are exceptions, and and that's one approach. And then there's the approach that they were human beings like we are, and that's what makes them so great, and therefore we can learn from them. And just like all human beings make mistakes, and there's things that one can question, and one can wonder, and one can even be critical of. So the others as well. But what's so powerful and what's so exceptional about them is how they work through those challenges and what ultimately they accomplished. And there's many examples of this throughout Sefer Bereishis, many different stories and interactions. But to me, one of the most difficult ones is what appears in this week's parsha, and that is the interaction between three individuals, between Yaakov and his two wives, Rachel and Leah, and to really try to understand each one of them in terms of how they interacted with the others and what they were thinking. I spent a lot of time today working through it, and I want to present something that more questions than answers, but hopefully one approach that we can perhaps at least on some level understand what transpired and what took place in terms of this interaction. And I think it's also important as we go through this to remember that they live in a different day and age. We often judge others based upon our current values and how society today looks at things. And that's not always fair. And I think often that usually that's not fair because, again, at different places in time, people had different values and perspectives. The world operated on a different level and with different rules and different perspectives. And so that's also just important to, as you go through a story like we're about to go through, to just to keep in mind that just because we have a certain perspective and a value system, it doesn't mean that's the way things always were, and who's right, who's wrong, who's better. So that's something to think about and to consider. So what am I referring to? So we know that Yaakov in last week's parsha, he's told by his mom he's got to run away because Esav is going to kill him, and Rivka, when she goes to her husband Yitzchak, so she doesn't tell Yitzchak that Esav is about to kill their son Yaakov. Instead, she tells him it's time for him to get a shidduch, and he needs to. She doesn't want him to marry any of the local women in Canaan. And therefore, when Yaakov presents himself to his father, so Yitzchak tells him the following: "Kum lech Paddan Aram, get up and go to Paddan Aram, Beisa Besuel Avi Imecha, the house of Besuel, your mom's father, right? Besuel was Rivka's father. And what should you do there? The kach licha misham isha, take yourself from there a wife." And I underline isha, like one wife, right? In isha, ibnos Lavan achi imecha, right? From your mom's got a brother. His name is Lavan. Apparently, they knew that he had daughters. So take a wife. Okay, and that's what happens. Yaakov leaves Beersheba and he heads to Haran. He has a famous encounter, the dream with the ladder. And then we're told he continues on his way and he arrives in a place and there's a well there. And There's all these shepherds hanging out there, but nothing's happening. There's a big rock on the well. And when Yaakov arrives there, he doesn't know exactly where he is. He doesn't know if he's if he's reached Charan, if he's near the house of Bethuel. And therefore, the Torah tells us the following, that when he arrives, you get the exact words. Right, he arrives in that location. Right, there's this well that's there, and then the field, and he encounters these shepherds. And Vayomer Lahem Yaakov, Achai Me'ayin Atem, where are you from? Vayomru MeCharan Anachnu, we're from Charan. Vayomer, good news, he knows he's supposed to go to Charan. Vayomer Lahem Hayidatem Es Lavan Ben Achor. Vayomer Yadam, do you know Lavan? Yeah, we know Lavan. Vayomer Lahem Shalom Lo, is everything good with him? Vayomer Shalom, everything is great. And not only is everything great, and now here comes Rachel onto the picture. Vehinei Rachel Bito Ba Imatzon. Right, if you were doing a play with kids at this point, you know, the curtain went lift up the curtain and Rachel appears with her sheep. And at that point, that's when Yaakov famously moves the stone all by himself, and there's a lot of beautiful interpretations about that. And then we're told, right, Odena medaber imam Rachel ba'av imatzon asher la'avia. I want to focus on this. So Rachel comes. Now, why is Rachel there? She's by herself with the sheep. So the Torah says Kira'ahi, because she was a shepherdess. So the Ramban right away is bothered by, why is she by herself? We know in another story in Tanakh where there are daughters involved in shepherding a flock. It's not just one, but it's seven. And that, of course, with Moshe and Sefer Shemos, when he has, Yisro has seven daughters, and all seven are there, all seven show up. So with Rachel, right, we'll find out in a few psukim, she has a sister, Leah. So why isn't Rachel and Leah, why aren't they there together? So says the Ramban, V'ulai bavor ki ene Leah rakos haya hashemesh mazikla. So we'll see in a moment. There's a lot of different interpretations. What does it mean that Leah's eyes were rakot? Right? We were told later on her eyes were rakot. And so Ramban's interpreting rakot is that somehow physically she had some sort of eye challenge. That somehow her eyesight was not the best. And then the sun apparently was, when it was very glaring and hot, and intense, it hurt her eyes, and she physically could not be out in the open with the blazing sun, in the Middle East, from the Middle East. It would, so she couldn't function as a shepherdess. Like she was hung out more in the tent. She had to be indoors because of the sun. That's what the Ramban suggests. Or he says, or another possibility is that perhaps Leah was of marriageable age and Rachel was not. Rachel was still kind of young at this point. And therefore, Lavan knew that, men could be rough, and he didn't want Leah to be put in a compromised situation of men to abuse her. So he sent Rachel, a little girl, Everyone, be nice to a little girl, but to Leah, wasn't the smartest idea to send her out. And he says, if that's the case, if she was younger, but that then explains what happens next. Everyone's always uncomfortable because Rachel comes, right? And this is when Yaakov, pushes the stone off the well. At this point, Yaakov kisses Rachel. How could Yaakov kiss Rachel at this point? It's not so appropriate. So Ramban says, well, maybe she was little. Right? So, he gave her a little kiss. Or the other approach that the Mefarshim say is that, Ibn Ezra says this, that you know, he kissed her on the forehead or something. It was a kiss of endearment. And he cries. Now, why is he crying? So Rashi says the reason why he's crying is because he saw in Ruach HaKodesh, he was able to see into the future, that she wouldn't be buried next to him. Right? Right, where is she buried? She's buried in Kavar Rachel. That's where she's buried. Right? She was buried in in Beit Lechem, on the way. But as opposed to Yaakov is going to be buried in Hebron, the Marasam HaMachpela, or he cried because he had nothing to give her. Right, when Eliezer went originally, so Eliezer went to get a shidduch for Yitzchak, came with all this money. Yaakov had nothing, so that's why he cried. But the other possibility, I saw Rav Hirsch says, you know why he cried? He cried because emotionally he was so devastated. He'd been running away for his life, and he didn't know, if he would be safe and if he ever would find his the family. And finally, when he's told that indeed this is Rachel, this is his cousin, he's just overcome with emotion that he gave her kiss. Right, he was overcome with emotion. And at that point, he then has to explain himself. But gave Yaakov to Rachel, ki achi avyu. He tells him, why am I giving you a kiss? Oh, because I'm a mishpacha. Right? Your father is my mom's brother. Chi ben rifkayhu. But turns it to Gedevi, and she runs and tells her father. So, so far, so good in the story. Right? So far, Yaakov is running away from his brother. He's told he needs to marry someone. And he encounters Rachel at the well. And he's overcome with emotion that he sees her. And okay, everything's okay so far. And then Lavan comes running out to greet him. Of course, Chazal famously say he runs out to greet him, thinking he has a lot of money with him. That's why he kisses him and he hugs him. He's trying to find where the money is hidden in his pockets. And apparently what happens next, that Yaakov stays for a month, and then Lavan says, okay, you want to stay any longer, you're gonna have to work for a living, and what do you charge? So before we actually have a discussion that was Lavan caught off guard what Yaakov then said, because Lavan said, what do you charge? Presumably, what was Yaakov going to request? A certain percentage of the flock. Some of the prophets. And yet, what does Yaakov say instead? So we're told the following. Lavan Shtevanot. Now Lavan had two daughters. Shem HaGdola Leah. Until this point, we don't know anything about Leah. Now also, for the first time, we're introduced to Leah. Leah is the older one. Shem HaKatana Rachel. The younger one is Rachel. Bene Leah Rakot. The eyes of Leah were Rakot. So again, Rakot, maybe she just had bad eyesight. Rashi says, Shaisa, no, that Rakot means that she was like full of tears, sadness, because apparently it was known, right, that there was an old, right, that her Rivka had an older son and a younger son. She being the older daughter, have to marry the older son. That means she'd have to have a shidduch with Esav. So that was horrible for her. Have to marry the wicked Esav. So, she was constantly in tears and pain and suffering. However, what's fascinating, many of the other Rishonim don't understand it that way. If you look at the Rasajigon, the Rashbam, I believe the Ibn Ezra, they all say that Rakot means the oat, beautiful. The Leah was also very pretty and beautiful. Rachel, I saw Yafas Toar, Yafas Mara. And maybe Rachel was just greater beauty on some level. Okay. And then we're told, by Yahab Yaakov as Rachel, but Yaakov loved Rachel. Now, why does Yaakov love Rachel? Now, he only has known her for a month. But apparently, I don't know, they were talking, they went out on some dates. I don't know. Somehow he becomes very, infatuated with Rachel. And therefore, now we understand what his response is going to be to Lavan. I'll work for you for 7 years, and there's lots of discussion why he says 7 years. It could be on a simple level, she's just too young at that point. Like it can you think the Ramban's approach is she was still like a girl, so he had to wait till she got a little bit older. I worked 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. He emphasizes your younger daughter. My Yomer Lavan, and Lavan responds, Tov titi osolach. It is good that I will give her to you. Then before I should also point out, he never says Rachel. I'm going to give Rachel to you. I'm going to give her to you. To give her, I better give her to you than to give her to someone else. That's like a beautiful way of agreeing to a shidduch. Okay, better to give it to you than to someone else. Not that, oh, no, you're like my son to me. I'm so happy that you're going to be part of the family. Nah, okay, you're better, I guess, than somebody else. Shvai Madi, remain with me. Now, let's pause for a moment. So if you're Leah at this moment, right, and you know what's going on, so and if you're interested in marrying Yaakov, obviously this is going to be very hurtful to you and very, very, very painful to you. In Yaakov's defense, you know, we could say that, you know, either he just likes Rachel more than he likes Leah. Could we go with Rashi's approach? Maybe he assumed that Leah maybe was set aside for Esav. Maybe she was already taken. Who knows? Like it's unclear. But one could argue if he bought the Bechora from Esav's, maybe now he really should marry Leah if she's the oldest. Right? Maybe now it's his responsibility to marry Leah. So it's not clear. Okay, he works for 7 years, and then Yaakov says, "All right, time for me to, you know, havo asishti, havo Leah. Let's go. It's time to commence. Time for me to marry her." So what does Lavan do? He makes a big party, we're told. And that night, he takes Leah, his daughter, and he brings her to him, right? And he's intimate with her. And she's given Zilpah as well. And the morning, behold, it is Leah. Ba'hinehi Leah. And by Yomer Lavan, Yaakov says to Lavan, Mazos, Asisali, what'd you do to me? I worked for Rachel, and you tricked me. So here we know, right? We know what Chazal say here, right? This is our Rivka's, Rachel's shining moment, right? That Rachel, knew what was happening. She kept quiet. She didn't interfere. She let this happen. Right, according to Chazal, she gave Leah signs that Yaakov and her had worked out earlier, because Yaakov suspected something with Lavan. Right, Rachel Mavaka, but now Rachel, already we learned in Sefer Yom, cries over her children. And God says, "Don't worry, you know, I'll everything will be okay." And the Medrash says, you know, "Why does God specifically listen to Rachel's tears? Because Rachel, you know, when there was." Sarah, when someone was brought, someone was switched for her. She didn't say anything. She kept quiet. So Rachel says, Rachel turns to God, right? When the Jews are sinning and says, you know, the Jews maybe switched you for idols, idolatry. I kept quiet when that happened. And God, you need to also let it go. You need to be forgiving and forget and move on. And God accepts, you know. So Rachel, we praise her. You know, we're so taken with Rachel's actions and her her behavior. It's interesting. You can read the psukim differently, right? There is another way to read the psukim, that it could be that Rachel nothing to do with this, right? That Lavan takes Leah and puts her there, and we'll see it in a moment, right? That several times it's going to mention that Yaakov. That Rachel always felt hated, right? That Rachel, I'm sorry, right? That Leah always feels. I'll give you a few examples. What's going to happen next? Yaakov's all upset. Lavan says, "Okay, wait a week, right? And then you'll let you marry Rachel. But you got to work another 7 years." So that's what happens. He waits a week, and he marries Rachel. But now he's stuck to be there for another 7 years. And he loves Rachel more than Leah. Now God sees that Leah is hated. So why is the, here's the difficult part, right? Why does Yaakov hate Rachel? Right? Does Yaakov hate Rachel? I'm sorry, why does Yaakov hate Leah? And does he hate Leah? So one possibility the Ramban suggests is that, yeah, he did hate Leah. Why does he hate Leah? Because he was always upset with Leah for not identifying who she was. And, you know, the whole night that they're together, alone in this room together, and she never says who she is. And therefore, he didn't forgive her for that. That's the Ramban suggests that. There's another school of thought. The Ramban says this, and the Radak very powerfully makes this point as well, that, you know, it's very troubling to say that, at least for me, it's very troubling to say Yaakov hated Leah. He hated Leah? That's very, and we know that this hatred was very much felt by Leah. How do we know that? God sees that, right? He saw Leah, that Leah's hated. And not only that, when it comes to naming her children, right? Now, when we name children, we name children, you know, after someone who passed away, you know, a grandparent or someone, you know, someone who was, you know, meant so much to us, someone who we hope will child will emulate and, you know, will follow in the footsteps of that person. Maybe it's a name we just like very much, and we hope, you know, this will be a good name, a good fit for the child. When Leah names her children, it always be interesting to have done like a psychologist like interview the children as to what they felt based on how, you know, the name that their parents. Sometimes like sometimes in Israel today, you know, parents will give their names, you know, especially in the religious Zionist community, names based on like political, like, you know, they'll name their kid Chevron, or name their kid, you know, the Golan Heights, or, you know, like they give the kid a name because, you know, it's a statement of Israeli sovereignty and. Like I'm making a political statement, whatever. That's whether that's a good idea or not. That's something, another interesting topic to look at. But all the kids, when Leah names her kids, it's always based on her feelings, right? They're doing something that impacts her. And so when the first child is born, she calls him Reuven. Reuven sounds like a nice name, but why should she call him Reuven? God saw my affliction. And now, finally, now my husband will love me. I finally can give him something he doesn't have. I've given him a child. So, like, that's horrible. Right? Isn't that terrible? That's how Leah feels. Now my husband will love me because now I've given him something. Right? I've given him a child. But apparently that didn't work. It sounds like that it didn't work. That her husband didn't love her. Why not? Because look at the next child that's born. She has another child. God has heard that I was hated. So he gave me this one. And then she called him Shema. So it's like still like terrible, right? This is her feelings, her emotions. And then, but she has another child. Now my husband will be attached to me finally. Now Chazal say, Rashi says, why is now? She says, okay, now my husband now will respect me because they had this tradition that he would have 12 children. He's got four wives, right? He's got Rachel, Leah, Bill, and Zilpah. I've now, you know, done my share. So now my husband will finally respect me. It's interesting. I saw the Chisuni who says the following: "At Ashav Hayisi Menalel Shnei Bni B'Shtei Yadai." Until this point, I had two kids. Who was raising them? Me. My Yaakov, he wasn't in out in the picture. Why was I raising? I have two hands. I take care of these two kids with my two hands. But Ashav Sholi Ben Shlishi. But now that I have a third child, I don't have three hands. I only have two. Now he's going to help me out. He's going to finally help me out because I can't do it on my own. So now we'll have a relationship maybe. Now I'll see him a little bit more often. It's like terrible, right? That perspective. It's so sad. And then what happens? Then she has a fourth child. And now, right now, now I can finally give thanks to Hashem. And she calls him his name Yehuda. Right, Rashi says now she can thank Hashem because now she has more than everyone because she's going to have more children than everyone else. The Ibn Ezra says, "Kitama pamazos achar sheyesh li arbabanim." Now that I have four sons, Od Hashem kilo achmo liyos liyos. I'm done. I'm good. She says, "I got four kids. I'm happy." In other words, perhaps I may not have the love of my husband, but I have four wonderful children, and that's that you know that can fill that void that I have in my life. So that is very harsh and extremely sad and troubling. Where's Yaakov in all this? Now I mentioned before the Ramban set. There's a second approach to the Ramban as well as the Radak, and they suggest the following. Again, they're very troubled. How can it be that Yaakov hates Rachel? And they say, if you look at the psukim, it never ever says that Yaakov hated Rachel. It doesn't say about his relationship between Rachel. I'm sorry, that never says that he hated Leah, right? Never says that he hated Leah. What does it say? It says, "Vayahav gamas Rachel mi Leah," that he loves Rachel more than Leah, which implies that there's some love for Leah. There's just more for Rachel. So says the Radak, but you see something very powerful. You see, when a wife, when she doesn't feel completely loved, and where a husband's attention is somewhere else, if he generally really does care about her, but if the husband is not exclusively focused on her, and there's certainly, like in this case, someone else in the picture, so the way she perceives it is as hatred, as pain and suffering. That's the way Yaakov didn't intend that it for the, be that way, but that's how it was interpreted by Leah. God sees that. God gives her these children, but Leah always lives with this. And, you know, the story continues to unfold. At this point, you know, Rachel then gives her her maidservant to Yaakov, which in itself was a very powerful statement on her part. It brings up the story with Sarah and Hagar, right? In fact, I believe some of the Forshim say that when you know, we mentioned earlier that God credits Rachel for, you know, what she did, not necessarily that she gave the signs to Leah, but for her bringing her maid, it was Zilpah, into the I think that right. She just bring into the picture. She brings in, Bilhah. No, she brings in Bilhah into the picture. That like Sarah bringing in Hagar, like that was her zechus, her merits. So she gives Bilhah, and then I think it's sad because what happens next? So Bilhah has these two children, and we're told the following. About Tera Leah, now again, Leah again, she amdami lades. So she now gives Zilpah. Why does Leah give Zilpah? So Leah is unable to have any more children. Perhaps at this point, maybe Yaakov's attention is now turning once again to Rachel. Because also in Rachel, through Bilhah, has now given Yaakov children. And now maybe Leah now once again feels pain. Hey, you forgot it on me. Right, the kids are growing up. There are four boys, probably a little rambunctious, probably not so... You know, Yaakov doesn't want to hang out too much in the tents. Probably like, you know, things fun all over the place and toys all over the floor, right? So Leah's feeling pain again. So she gives Zilpah an Now, again, attention can be back on Leah because now two children are born. And then we're told, by Yelech, we're almost done here with the, and we'll try to put it all together. And then Reuven, who's the oldest, goes out. It's the Ksir Titim, it's the time of the harvest. And he finds his Dudaim Basadeh. He finds his Dudaim. What are the Dudaim that he finds in the field? So Rashi, some Forshim say that this was for fertility purposes, right? And that Reuven finds it. He brings it to Leah, his mother. Remember, Leah stopped having children. So he brings it to her mother. And Rachel somehow sees what has happened, that he's found this like magical fertility treatment, and she begs Leah to give it to her. Rachel begs Leah, give it to me. And And when is and now Leah finally lashes out at Rachel. You took my husband, which is interesting because Rachel, you could think Rachel would say, you took my husband. So Leah assumes and knows that she's deserving. And maybe Leah's deserving of marrying Yaakov because she's the oldest. And Yaakov, like I said before, he bought the Bechorah. So maybe she really should marry Leah. Right? Who are you, you know, Rachel? I was the one who's always deserving. And Dad made the right decision that I should marry Yaakov. So, you know, you took my husband, and now you want to take Duda'i B'ni, you want to take my son's, you know, these Duda'im. So Rachel says, okay, you can be with Yaakov tonight, just give me the Duda'im, which again implies that Yaakov hasn't been with Leah. And again, so Leah, you know, encounters spends the night with Yaakov. And she tells him, you know, that I sort of bought you for the night. God once again hears Vayishma Elokim es Leah, and now she has a fifth and sixth child, right? Sachar Zvulun are now born. And then and while all this is going on, remember Rachel gets very upset at Yaakov, you know, give me children. And Yaakov says, like, you know, can I give you children? And Leah has, you know, in the interim has a seventh child. This time it's a girl, it's Dina. Finally, God remembers Rachel, and she has a child and names the child Yosef. I mentioned there's a second opinion with the Duda'im. Some say it wasn't a fertility treatment, but rather it was the spices, right, to make her smell good and feel good, right? And Rachel wants to take that, and she wants to become attractive to her husband, and Rachel's now taken away from her. So you see, there's lots of tension here. So, like, what do we do with all this? What do we do with all this? So, you know, so Chazal, the way they look at this is that, and again, Rashi's real emphasizes this, is that Rachel and Leah genuinely wanted to partner with Yaakov to create the Jewish people. Again, somehow they knew about the 12 children and each one having three, and so each one wants to be a part of that. Each one wants to be the mother of the Jewish people. And therefore, they're vying for that opportunity, for that privilege, that merit. You know, that's how Chazal look at a lot of what's happening. Again, but we have a question about what was Yaakov and what was he, you know, was he being unfair and how did he mistreat Leah, ignore Leah? So, I just want to say the following: I don't have any great approach to this. It's very difficult. It's very difficult, this whole dynamic. And I think, you know, one of the lessons from this, you know, we say Amasa Avos Simon Labanim, you know, the actions of our forefathers are a sign or a lesson for the children, which means that often what happened to Sefer Bereishis would happen later on to the Jewish people, but it also means that we learn lessons, you know, from the stories in Bereishis. And so one of the lessons is that, you know, this is not a healthy relationship to have, you know, more than one wife and sisters. Like, this is not, like, sort of a Yaakov maybe had no choice, you know, with love and trickery, but this is not, you know, a healthy thing to do. So, you know, that you can learn from this. But I like to suggest, in addition to all of that, is that, you know, there's all this tension and unpleasantness and pain and suffering and competition that seems to be happening here. But it's interesting when you come to the end of the parsha. And Yaakov, that's why Lavan is, you know, giving love Yaakov all these problems, and constantly, you know, changing the terms of his working conditions and how he can earn a living. So Yaakov finally realizes it's enough, and God tells him it's time to get out of there. So we're told then the following: Vayishlach Yaakov, Vayikra l'Rachel u'l'Leah, Hasadeh el Sono. He calls his Rachel and Leah to him in the field. And he says to them, Vayomer Lahan, Re'enochi es pnei avichem, ki enenu elai ki mom shom. He gives a whole speech how, you know, your dad has turned against me, and like, it's not good for me to remain here. And so then they listen, and he says how God appeared to him and told him to get out of there. And then we're told, Vatan Rachel v'Leah v'tomar lo, Rachel and Leah, they respond and they say to him, "You're right. Let's get. We gotta get out of here." So, I think those people are often overlooked, but I think there's something very powerful that the Torah is now presenting. At this point, Rachel and Leah are equal as being his wives. He respects them both, right? He comes to them. You know, he not just doesn't just dictate what he wants to happen. He asks their opinion, and he waits for them to respond. And specifically, he comes to both of them. He speaks to both of them. Now, Rachel is mentioned before Leah both times. That is noteworthy, right? That Rachel always comes before Leah. But nonetheless, the fact that he at this point, they are his wives. And he wants to have a conversation with them. He wants to give them, you know, hear what they have to say. And he respects them. And they on a united front, they both together are one voice, and they both are in agreement that it's time to leave. So with all the mess that and all the you know, the difficulty that was experienced initially, so maybe at some point things began to become smooth, and things were you know, there was a sense of, we'll figure this out together, we're going to make this work, and there's some semblance of whatever normalcy is that eventually unfolds and emerges within the family. And I think a lesson to take away from all this is that, you know, in our own lives, so there are moments when things are very bumpy and very challenging and very difficult. And sometimes it's like you want to throw in the towel and you want to be finished with it and over with it and, you know, and forget it. But sometimes you put in the work and you put in the effort and, you know, you try to work things out and smooth things out over time. You know, sometimes, not always, but sometimes you can figure out a path forward. And sometimes you can figure out how to make something that seems on the surface or initially so difficult. You know, over time, people can change, people can rethink, or people can just come to an understanding that, hey, if we do this a certain way, we can make this happen and make this work. And ultimately, you see, like, the families together, right? They all leave together, and they're one unit. And we see in next week's parsha as they cross over, you know, back into Israel. You know, and, you know, just at the end of the story, you know, tragically, Rachel dies right away. It sounds like Leah lives for a lot longer, right? And Leah indeed becomes, you know, the long-term wife of Yaakov, which is just interesting how that sort of unfolded and happened. It, in many ways, it's a very tragic story, extremely painful story and sad story. And, you know, why it has to be this way? So, you know, that's a question. It's hard, you know, can't really really answer. But at least in terms of, there is a moment of peace, I guess, within the family. And there is a moment when we're all together and that we're unified you know, unit, and they, you know, and together as one family, they, you know, they march out of Haran and they return, you know, to the promised land. They return to Israel, and Rachel and Leah together with one voice being Yaakov's wives. Okay. That's just my thought. Hopefully, maybe in another year is down the road, we'll come up with some other approaches to this. But that's what I'm thinking right now. Wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos.